Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, disappointments for lead candidates in the race for the White House. A change in policy for migrants heading to Europe. Telemedicine, a hope for those hard-to-reach patients. And teenage heartthrob Nick Jonas has a new album.
Everybody's been anxiously awaiting the name of the new album, and it is Last Year Was Complicated.
It was.
And it was for
it was.
Him.
It's right here on The Voice of America. In U.S. politics, Texas Senator Ted Cruz and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders have won the Republican and Democratic Party primary elections in Wisconsin. Cruz, who is challenging New York real estate magnate Donald Trump for the Republican presidential nomination, addressed cheering supporters late Tuesday.
Together, we will win a majority of the delegates, and together, we will beat Hillary Clinton.
Sanders insisted he has the momentum, even though Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton maintains a wide delegate lead.
With our victory tonight in Wisconsin, we have now won 7 out of 8 of the last caucuses and primaries.
Jeffrey Skelling, associate editor of the Saboteau Crystal Ball, a publication of the University of Virginia Center for Politics, told VOA's Victor Beatty, for Trump, the way to secure the Republican Party's presidential nomination before the national convention in Cleveland in July has narrowed.
He was pretty borderline to get to 1,237 delegates, even if you were sort of gaming it out and giving him a statewide victory in Wisconsin and thus most of the delegates from the Badger State. Now, he's basically in a position where if he wants to get a majority, he's either going to have to do even better than maybe we could predict at this point in his home state of New York and also in California. Or he is going to have to do as well as he can and then also maybe pick up some support from delegates who are technically unbound or were committed to other candidates or are now free. However, a complication in that process is that it appears that Marco Rubio is trying to hold on to his 173 delegates so that he can perhaps be something of a power broker to convention and or prevent Trump from getting to a majority. The most important thing to really consider is that this has definitely raised the odds of a contested convention occurring. And we haven't had a contested convention, and by that I mean one that went beyond one ballot. And on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders looks to be getting a pretty decent victory. But the problem for Sanders at this point is delegate math. And he needs to win by this kind of number and then win by even more in some places. Sanders is really climbing up a steep hill, going ahead to a state like New York, which is incredibly diverse, especially around New York City, which will deliver a huge chunk of the vote. It will be difficult for Sanders to win in that environment.
Let's talk about the Republicans. We hear a lot of talk about a brokered or open convention. What does this all mean?
If the convention goes to the second ballot, suddenly over half of the delegates will be technically free agents, which is to say that the candidate that they were bound to by the vote that occurred in their state or territory will no longer apply to them, and it will be up to their personal individual feelings. And if you go beyond the second ballot, at that point, the vast majority of the delegates are essentially free agents at that point.
On the Democratic side, Senator Sanders, does his staying power mean something bad for Hillary Clinton for November?
I think part of that depends on who the Republicans end up nominating. If you look at Sanders supporters, most of them don't have negative feelings toward Clinton. Most of them would probably support her in November. But I do think the longer this carries on with Sanders very actively campaigning against Clinton, the more you do sow seeds for some possible intra-party turmoil and raise the possibility of more animosity.
After Wyoming, the race for the White House next turns to New York. That is followed by contests April 26th in Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Maryland, Connecticut, and Delaware. Despite Tuesday's wins for Cruz and Sanders, political analysts say those achievements do not mean people should rush to bet on them to win the next states or their party nominations. Craig Gilbert, the Washington bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, says it's pretty common in this process for the race just to change from state to state. momentum hasn't always helped. And for a look at what's going on the web concerning this story, I'm joined by social media reporter Andrew Palchewski. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you for having me, Susan.
Chitter chatter out there, huh, this
Absolutely.
Morning?
Absolutely. We have, just as we talked about yesterday, hashtag, you know, primary day is always trending on the Tuesdays. Wednesday is kind of the analysis, the amateur analysis, if you will, on social media. And it's
Monday night quarterback for political issues.
Exactly, yeah. And when you look at the social media, it kind of is a bit of a mouthpiece for the campaigns. Some of the ideas that you're seeing the campaigns put out, you see their supporters then go and kind of echo on social media. So Trump coming out and saying, oh, well, there was fraud in this vote, and that's why we didn't win. A lot of the supporters are alleging, oh, well, the Cruz campaign was up to dirty tricks and this and that. Bernie Sanders saying that they've, you know, won the last six of seven contests. Their supporters are saying, isn't this, you know, calling out the mainstream media and saying, isn't this, you know, evidence that he is kind of the front runner now, or he's stealing some of the thunder from Hillary Clinton? And then someone from Hillary's camp on social media is saying that, you know, she lost by 18 points to Obama in 2008. She lost by 13 to Bernie this time. So she is improving. She is improving. But, you know, of course, all this amateur analysis that we see on social media only going to continue as we go into the next nominating contests. Another trending story, of course, we've been talking about is the Panama Papers. And this I found, it's a fun little story, somewhat related. They're catching people now, not necessarily through revelations like the Panama Papers, but through Instagram. Specifically, there's this account on Instagram called Rich Kids of Instagram, and it's one of these accounts you follow to kind of hate. And these kids who are, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old posting pictures on yachts and in private jets and all these things, flaunting their wealth. Well, authorities are using these pictures and the geotagging with these pictures to track down the parents of some of these kids, some of whom are wanted for financial fraud, some of whom are claiming they're broke and can't pay out on child support or divorce payments. So it's a nice way that social media is kind of bringing some justice to these people. And if you've ever followed the account, you know that these people can be, you know, very obnoxious. So it's a nice,
so you're glad
nice,
to see
nice that
going
they're getting
on.
Some justice. I think a lot of people are very happy about that.
Okay, well, thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Australian astronomers say they have found the largest solar system ever observed. When they noticed a solitary planet meandering through space, the astronomers wondered if it had a host star or if it were a rogue or starless planet. So, after conducting a search, the astronomers found a red dwarf star that's about 100 light years away, which is the same distance as the planet. The astronomers linked the star with the planet after they studied their motion and noticed they were both moving together. The solitary planet is thought to be a gas giant planet with about 12 to 15 times the mass of Jupiter. Astronomers calculated that the distance between the planet and its star is about 1 trillion kilometers. The planet makes one complete orbit around its star every million years, and its orbit is more than 140 times wider than Pluto's. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The European Union has been working with Greece and Turkey to help alleviate the migration problem they've been having in the region from the Middle East, South Asia, and Africa. Our correspondent, Luis Ramirez, right now is in Turkey, where apparently the EU has agreed to make some changes in order to answer some concerns from human rights groups. Luis joins us here on the line. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, Susan.
So what has happened?
Well, the pretty significant development after an outcry by human rights groups who have been protesting on the Greek island of Lesbos for days now since the EU started to deport migrants. The rights groups complained that the migrants were not getting due process. They were not getting a fair chance to apply for asylum, and that the process was not transparent. Well, on Wednesday, the EU made an announcement that it is now giving every migrant a chance to apply for asylum before a decision is made to return them to Turkey. That is a development because, well, essentially, what they're saying is that there will be no automatic returns. There was the accusation from human rights groups that the process was not giving people that chance, that they were simply being put on the boats. They say that's what happened on Monday when more than 200 migrants were returned as part of the first shipment. Now the migrants will have their cases heard individually. Their vulnerabilities will be taken into account. This is directly related to the charge that Turkey has a bad human rights record and that their fate is uncertain, that some of them might, their lives might be in danger by being returned to Turkey. This is the EU's way of addressing that concern, of saying no one will be sent back if it looks like they will, if there is a chance that they will be killed, if their life is in danger in Turkey. And well, that is being implemented by about 70 staffers of the UN's asylum agency arriving in Lesbos on Wednesday. They arrived on the first flight in, from Athens on the island. And this is just in time for the next shipment of deportees, which is scheduled to take place on Friday. Those deportees being brought to Turkey, where I am now, and will be processed. On the Turkish side, there is a situation where you have them being whisked away out of public sight to camps far away from populated regions.
This sounds like a tremendous undertaking, though, Luis. There's so many people involved, and you mentioned there's only 70 people coming.
They're certainly looking to be, they are overwhelmed, in fact. More than 3,000 estimated migrants being held in one camp alone on Lesbos. And the situation there is that the asylum office tells me they already have about 1,000 cases where people have expressed an interest in applying for asylum. They're going to be handling those, processing those at a rate of 50 per day. So that gives you a sense of just how big a backlog they're looking and how slow this process is going to be. When you consider that you had 200 people deported, about 200 people deported on Monday, another 200 going to be deported on Friday, well, there are more than 3,000 waiting. It's going to take a while to clear them out. I should mention to that one other element to this story is that they continue to arrive from Turkey to Lesbos, migrants making the dangerous journey, now knowing that they may be and likely will be returned to Turkey, but they're still going ahead and taking the chance. Officials tell me that they are arriving at a rate of between 300 and 500 a day, even now.
Well, thank you very much, Luis.
Thank you, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, telemedicine, a new modern tool for healthcare, and a new single from one of the Jonas Brothers. Healthcare for elderly patients living far from hospitals has always been problematic, but modern communications technology is helping bridge the distance and technological gap between doctor and elderly patient. Reporter George Putich has been following the story and joins us here in the studio. Hi, George.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, please tell us about this telemedicine study program funded by the European Union.
Well, the core of the study is the fact that with today's technology, with smartphones and microelectronic devices, you can do a lot of things remotely. You can send data from sensors that you attach to your body, and the doctors can easily access that data and design the treatment for their patients. So European Union is supporting with some donations pilot programs in different countries to see how effective can this be for patients who do not have easy access to their doctors but have recurring health problems and that need constant monitoring.
One of those projects was in Greece. Can you tell us how that one worked out?
Yes. In a small Greek town of about 130,000 inhabitants, Trikala, they don't have a hospital there, right? They don't have specialists. And there are a lot of elderly people. Greece is known to be a country with a lot of retirees. And those people cannot drive. The transportation is maybe not available every day. So they have sent a number of technicians with small devices that can measure all kinds of things like electrocardiogram, glucose meter, blood pressure meter, oximeter, and they go to the houses of the elderly patients. They measure their medical data, and they send it by smartphone to the larger hospital, which is about 50 kilometers away in Larissa, and doctors can monitor their patients daily. And,
so it worked well.
Yes, it worked well, and it looks like it will continue.
So is this practical for any region of the world? There are so many remote and poor communities.
Absolutely, it's practical. Of course, the only problem is the availability of the cell phone signal. You have to build cell phone towers in order to cover the area. But if the area is covered and the people have already cell phones, in that case, it's very easy to set up a program like this.
I wonder if it's painless.
It's absolutely painless, of course.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, George.
You're welcome.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Sleep. The average adult needs 7 to 9 hours of it per night, and children need even more, up to 11 hours per night. People who are sleep deprived suffer a variety of problems, such as lower alert levels and cognitive ability. Now, U.S. scientists are adding another side effect. Higher food intake. University of Chicago researchers followed 14 volunteers in their 20s for 4 days. Half were allowed to get a full night's sleep, but the others were restricted to 4.5 hours per night. The researchers found that even though they'd eaten full meals, the sleep-deprived subjects still ate more, and when they did, they chose high-fat and protein snacks. The authors of the study published in the journal Sleep say their sample was small, but the results suggest that sleep restriction leads not only to increased caloric intake, but also to higher pleasure-seeking eating. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Teenage heartthrob Nick Jonas has got a new album out, and here to talk about it all is Larry London of Border Crossings. Welcome, Larry.
Oh, thank you, Susan. Yes, Nick Jonas, one of the Joe Bros, the Jonas Brothers. There were three of them. There was Kevin, Joe, and Nick.
And they were all cute.
They still are. And they decided they wanted to go in different musical directions. And so that's exactly what they've done. The eldest of the Jonas Brothers, who is Joe Jonas, is now in a group called DNCE. But Nick, who is the youngest brother, has gone off in an R&B pop direction, and he's going to continue in that vein with the new album that's coming out. He's just announced this. It's coming out June 10th, and everybody's been anxiously awaiting the name of the new album, and it is Last Year Was Complicated.
It was.
And it was for him. There were tabloid reports that he was dating Kate Hudson, Goldie Hawn's daughter. There were all kinds of rumors about who he was dating, but Nick maintains he's not dating anyone. He doesn't have time to be dating anyone. In fact, he's going out on tour with Demi Lovato. It's called the Future Now Tour, and the two of them will hit the road in June as well, kind of supporting his album release.
Well, how old is Nick now?
Nick is young. He's in his 20s, and he got his start on the Disney Channel.
I mean,
that's kind of where they began. And so I remember seeing the Jonas Brothers on tour with Miley Cyrus a number of years ago. And they have been romantically linked to everyone in the music industry. All three brothers have, at one point or another, dated Miley Cyrus and Selena Gomez, and the list goes on and on. But and then it's a very talented, very handsome young man. And so this new song, which by the way is called Close, features a Swedish singer, and her name is Tove Lo. She's on tour with Maroon 5 right now.
So close. Oh.
Well, does Nick still get along with his brothers, even though they've all gone their separate ways?
That's a great question, and that's a common question. Yes, they love each other. Yes, they get along quite nicely. They have a difference of opinion as far as music is concerned. Each one wants to establish his own creative niche, and so that is what they've done by going in different directions. Kevin is at home with his wife and their child. So Kevin is kind of doing, he had a cooking show on cable television. So he's really not working that much in music anymore while Nick and Joe are.
Well, do you think the three of them will ever get back together again on one stage?
Ah, that's a question that's
always
asked.
A draw of money, you know.
Yes, there is. And there is a possibility. I mean, they haven't ruled it out. As far as the Jonas Brothers are concerned, they never said this was the end and we're done as the Jonas Brothers. They just are taking a break, as a lot of groups seem to be doing these days, taking a break to extend their own independence.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry. Remind us where our listeners can come and listen to you.
They can find me. Well, there's a number of different ways you can find me other than listening on the VOA One Network. You can go to voanews.com and then check out programs, TV, border crossings, or you can go to facebook.com/VOA Larry London, and there I'll be.
Well, thank you very much, Larry London.
Thank you.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It is crucial that the overwhelming good being done by peacekeepers and other international forces in the Central African Republic be reinforced by full and complete accountability for the betrayal of trust by some among their ranks who have sexually exploited and abused civilians. One report from the international advocacy group AIDS Free World cites additional findings by UN officials in the Central African Republic, or CAR, of allegations of sexual exploitation and abuse by UN and non-UN personnel there between 2013 and 2015. 108 women and girls, the majority of them minors, claim to have been sexually abused, reportedly by UN and African Union peacekeepers and French forces whose presence in the CAR was meant to ensure civilian protection. It is the latest in a series of such accusations against international peacekeeping forces in the country. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Ra'ad Al Hussein, called the new accusations sickening, and the UN Stabilization Mission in the CAR, MINUSCA, has launched a full investigation into the alleged conduct by UN and French troops, as well as local armed groups. We are taking these allegations, some of which are particularly odious, extremely seriously. It is vital, he said, that victims are protected and the abusers be punished. There has to be accountability and there has to be credible deterrence. U.S. Ambassador to the UN Samantha Power, who was in the Central African Republic to attend the inauguration of the country's new president, Faustin Archange Touadéra, had the opportunity to meet with some of the families of victims of abuse in the town of Bambari. It was gut-wrenching to hear them speak about how the peacekeepers they had looked to as protectors became perpetrators, she said. Ambassador Power noted that the people of the Central African Republic witnessed the potential for peacekeepers to do tremendous good and also for them to inflict tremendous harm. This plague of sexual abuse must stop, she insisted. Would-be perpetrators have to know that they cannot get away with such abuses. UN member states must thoroughly and impartially investigate and, where appropriate, prosecute individuals alleged to have committed sexual exploitation and abuse, said Ambassador Power. The UN Security Council and all member states must see to it that we live up to the standards we have set. We are seeing the devastating consequences when we do not. The stakes of addressing this problem for the victims, for nations like the Central African Republic, and for the UN and its member states could not be higher.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.